When we're young, we move with freedom and confidence, with a great resilience to injury. But somewhere along the line, we develop poor habits and become more vulnerable to back pain. Back Pain Solutions features evidence-based and practical advice to help you take back control of your health and get back to the activities you love. This is your guide to better back health through movement. So join us as we demystify some of the commonly held beliefs about back pain and build your confidence to a stronger back the smart way.
All right, welcome back to the Back Pain Solutions podcast, everybody. For those that are listening or watching, in fact, now that we're recording as well, our video as well as the audio from previous sessions. So today we thought we'd do a bit of a case review. And Jacob has a client, obviously won't mention any names, but just to give you an example of some of the ways that these patients, clients present to us in clinic, some of the things that we do, and also the outcomes that we get. Because often we see those patients that are tricky patients, long history low back pain, chronic low back pain, periodic episodic low back pain, and they can be quite challenging. And sometimes it's good just to get an insight into some of those clients. It might give you some reassurance, but also give you some confidence that there is a strategy or strategies that you can adopt with the right advice to make your own recovery. So Jacob, welcome back to another episode. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Ben. Thank you. Yeah, nice to be here.
Good. Yes, as always, good to chat. So tell me, this client, where do we start? When did the client present to you? How long have you been seeing them? And what were the main challenges and things that they were saying when they came to see you?
So this specific person came in about 3 months ago, and he is about 50 years of age, came to me with a long history of low back pain, never really resolving, and he had no accidents.
So long history is how long?
Years. Years.
Are we talking years of falling? 10 years plus or 20 years?
Ten years plus, absolutely, okay. Of falling back, okay. Getting a little bit better, trying stuff. As soon as he would exert himself, especially in the gym or doing sport, he likes to cycle long distances, then he runs into a barrier, and that's his low back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what were some of the things that he's tried and some of the things that he was doing in the gym or training wise? It sounds like from what you've said, there was a bit of a sporadic approach to his training and to his kind of recovery. Is that right? Would you say, is that fair?
I would say he's a long-term cyclist, so he likes to go mountain biking in the winter, and he likes to road bike in the summer. But he also likes weight training, and so he would either start cycling longer distances, and he'd have a fallback. So he'd build it up, okay. And he'd fall back. And he doesn't understand why. And at the same time, when he would go to the gym, he starts lifting weights, doing weight training. And I think he, you know, like a lot of guys have the idea, you got to deadlift to get strong, you know, you got to squat to get strong, and sees that as the sort of holy grail to building real strength. And as he would build up his deadlift or squatting, he would always run into falling back and going through his back or hurting himself. And then typically he would do stretches and stuff like that, but it wouldn't resolve.
Okay. So he's got a 10 year plus history of back pain, and this back pain is, by the sounds of it, episodic. How did it start? Did it just gradually come on? Did he do something specifically 10 years plus ago that he specifically remembers? How did it begin? What's the journey he's been on in terms of that initiation?
No accidents. Gradual onset. Can't really remember when and how. Just said it's been there for years, many years. As we go through the case, we'll understand why there's been no accident and why it actually just had a gradual onset, posture-wise.
Okay. So he's come in with a 10-year history. It's a gradual onset. There's no red flags there. What are the things that aggravate, the things that relieve the pain for him when you first saw him? Was there any kind of common factors, or again, was it difficult to pinpoint for him subjectively at least?
Yeah, so when he came in, he couldn't really find a comfortable position with his back. So no position was comfortable. Sitting, lying down, he would feel it. Lying down was the most comfortable, but he would still feel it. Walking, he said, he would actually feel it, whereas usually when you have low back pain, well, usually quite often walking would actually help you to not feel very much. And
sure. I don't know how you're walking, still of course, trained. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But he still trained, and cycling was painful, but he tried to do short distances. And I think he thought that it would just go over, but it didn't go over this time, or it didn't. It took a long time to get less, and that's why he came to see me.
Okay. And had he seen anybody else, physios, otherwise? Had he had treatment?
Yes. He said in the past he's been to physiotherapists, he's been to massage therapists, he's been to osteopaths, personal training. He's done quite a few things, and none of it seems to ever really solve the problem. So he'd always, you know, build it up again. Especially I think from taking rest as a big part of the treatment he had, he'd get better, and he'd build it up again, and then he'd fall back.
Okay. And when you say rest from training or rest from treatment?
Rest from training, or rest from probably the aggravating factors: cycling, training, exerting himself.
Yeah. Okay. And was there anything else that you asked him during the history that you thought was quite telling in this case, or you were intrigued by, or really was next steps examination? Is there anything else to share on that initial history, maybe?
Yeah, the thing that I didn't understand initially was, why would he have so much pain if he's training, if he's not really using his body he's not a builder, he doesn't sit long hours, he works with his body, but it's not, I don't want to give away his profession, but he doesn't, he seems to get a bit of everything, you know, all kinds of movement, not sitting too much, not working or lifting too hard or heavy. And so it didn't make sense why he had so much pain and why it wouldn't resolve. And I looked at him, he seemed to have a great posture, a very healthy, sporty, fit, nearly 50-year-old.
Okay.
So it didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, so I knew I had to go a bit further and really investigate and find the cause.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So he's got a variable posture, which, you know, arguably in many cases is better for most people than that sustained sitting, or whether you're, you know, carpenter, tradesman, arguably at times you're maybe bent over, particularly through the low back, for long periods of time. Although I would argue that tradesmen have that variability to an extent, but could be, you know, more vulnerable in terms of loads that they're lifting, etc. And it sounds like this guy is not lifting heavy. He's got a variable posture. He's not sitting for long periods. So in many ways, that's quite helpful. That's quite good. And yet,
yes,
he's still struggling, and he's seen various practitioners, and he's getting persistent pain. Okay,
exactly. Okay. Yes. And still, he seems to be very, seems to have a low tolerance. So there seemed to be a reason why he would fall back very easily, and it didn't make sense.
Okay. And did you pinpoint anything? You mentioned cycling. Were there any specific movements in the gym that were aggravators, or could he not really tell whether squats or deadlifts or anything like that was particularly problematic?
The last time he went to the gym, it was actually putting a weight back, putting a dumbbell, not too heavy, back on the rack. And then he went through his back.
Okay. And when you say went through his back, he felt the back go, as it inverted commas? Okay.
Felt the back go, cramping since then, very uncomfortable.
Got it. Okay. And no leg pain, no kind of ridiculous pain, very much low back.
Very much local lower back, yeah.
All right. Okay. And so where did you go next? Obviously examination, that's what we would do. But what were the findings? What was evident for you?
Yeah, so you know, first of all, when I looked at his posture, looked at his back, I realized that he had a very shallow low back. So the typical rounding hollowness of the low back, which we don't see all too often, but in a more or less healthy back, we've got a little bit of a hollow. That was more, it was more or less missing. It was very flat. And so that already raises suspicion to me, which I'll elaborate on a little in a little bit. But then I did all the other tests. You know, I palpated palpation when he was lying on his tummy, palpating on his spine, actually didn't hurt.
And so when you no say pain. Palpating, you're talking kind of pressing and challenging the spinous processes, feeling that movement in the low back.
Exactly. So translation between the spine, the vertebrae, seeing if I can trigger or look up pain at a disc or something like that. I couldn't find anything there. Then I went on to do the McGill instability, lumbar instability test. So hanging him over the end of a bench, seeing if I can get some movement between the vertebrae there. No reaction. And then I did the heel drop test to see if there's some axial compressive problems in the spine, and that was fine. And the lumbar extension distraction test, where I could maybe pick up some instability between the vertebrae. I know I'm using some big terms here, but I want to say those tests were all fine. They were all not a problem. So I couldn't find any serious pathology, any serious problems in the spine from those tests.
Okay.
But I did notice that he had a
lot of the orthopedic tests, kind of classic orthopedic tests, if you like, pretty negative, pretty much insignificant.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And also, but I did notice in palpating his spine that he had a very rigid, stiff spine. So there wasn't a lot of play in the spine.
Okay.
In the low back.
Okay. Yeah. But not painful, but just notably stiff.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So where's your kind of head at that point? If you're finding, because for a lot of practitioners, that's like, oh God, I can't elicit the pain. What do I do here? So
yeah.
What did that make you think? What was your thought process at that point?
Yeah. So, you know, luckily I've seen this before, so it didn't freak me out, and it's something I look for. But I realized, okay, so there's no direct lumbar or low back disc that I can find that's really irritated when I spring on it, when I push on it, which I generally reproduce if I have a typical low back patient. But I like I mentioned before, he had a very flat low back spine. And then I know that makes him more vulnerable when he bends forward, for example, or when he lifts something heavy from the ground, obviously bending forward, that the bending forces are going to be different in the low back, and especially where the low back meets the rib cage of the spine. So I know that's going to most likely be a more vulnerable place if your low back is flatter than the general low back.
Okay.
And so then my hypothesis goes to the diagnosis of a TL hinge. So hinging too much at the crossing of the rib cage and beginning of the low back spine.
Okay.
Yeah. So does that make sense?
So where that kind of more kyphotic mid back, if you like, that kind of generally arches back, as that transitions into the lumbar spine, which generally is more of a lordosis curves the other way, that transitional zone was the point of concern or kind of that was the question mark in your head, more as a result of this more flattened spine in terms of the lower back.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I, at that point, what was the next step then in terms of eliciting discomfort in that area or challenging movement patterns, etc. in that area?
Well, I couldn't really elicit it with the tests because the tests are generally not designed to pick up on a typical TL hinge irritation at that part of the spine. So then I went on and I looked a bit further and I saw that he has something overlaying this problem, which is called a lower cross syndrome. Shall I just explain what that is? So basically, yeah, if you look from the side of the spine, So if you look at the spine or the pelvis from the side, you can see that the belly, where you can draw a cross over the pelvis, and so you have the low back, you have the anterior hip flexors, you have the stomach or abdominal wall, and if you follow this line, you have the glutes, the buttock muscles. And so typically you'll have tautness or tightness at the low back muscles, hip flexors, weakness or less communication from the brain to the abdominal muscles and the gluteal buttock muscles. And so I noticed he had very stiff hip flexors. I noticed that he quite quickly wants to hang in his low back when especially he goes into a plank by making him do a plank. So I noticed by looking at those aspects that the abdominal wall and the gluteals are not firing. They're not doing their job. So there's probably more pressure through the low back from low back.
So when he's doing a plank, when you say hang, he's sagging through the tummy a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And so then I think, okay, abdominal wall in the front, not doing its job properly.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I noticed this, what we call lower cross syndrome, overlaying this problem. I looked at his hip flexors, very taut and tight, you know, hip extension limited. If his hip extension is limited, I know that his buttock muscles are probably not doing their job properly.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. And so at this point, where did you go next in terms of further examination, just to kind of make what we would describe as a working diagnosis, if you like?
Yeah. So, in terms of testing, I had him sitting down and I had him bending forward. I could really feel a bumpiness or a bit of a bump in the area of the transition between the rib cage and the low back. So I noticed that it really changes in position from standing to sitting down and actually slouching. So my hypothesis went to the fact that he's got this TL hinge, you know, and I realized that that's his weak spot, tender spot, gets irritated there very easily. And my thought process went to, okay, we've got to address this lower cross syndrome situation, and we need to really talk about posture in all sorts of positions. Yeah. So we can give that TL hinge area a break, allow it to recover, and we'll have less low back muscular tautness if we fix this lower cross syndrome.
Okay. And so were you suggesting, or is the suggestion that the pain coming from that kind of thoracolumbar or that transitional zone, was that coming from the disc, do you think? Was that coming from joints? Was it a combination? Was it muscular? What would you say was the kind of pain drivers there in terms of tissue?
That's a good question. I would think that it's disc. Could be more than disc. So I didn't actually mention, I sent him for an X-ray. X-ray came back. Disc spaces were good. So no changes there. But it confirmed a very flattened low back.
Okay. And what was your kind of clinical rationale for the X-ray? Was that just to kind of, were you concerned about ruling anything else out, like such as something like a spondylolisthesis, where there can be that transitional segment, that segment kind of slipping forward, anything like that? Or was this just more of a confirmatory examination, just based on this being, let's say, maybe a little bit more unique versus other cases?
I think the X-ray was more to assist my my treatment, but I also wanted to know, you know, if he's had so many years of pain and he has a TL hinge, has it developed to loss of disc height? Is there degeneration of the disc? In other words, are we dealing with a hot disc, you know, a disc that's degenerated? So if we know that there's a considerable loss of disc height, he's going to be quite sensitive to anything or long postures. That's anything that's going to irritate that area. And then the management of that problem is going to be different with this knowledge. Okay. And when it came back, we saw, okay, actually disc spaces looks very good, but he has a very flat low back. So, and we're going to talk about the management of that in a moment.
Okay. And in terms of that flatness, that's just normal for him? Or was there any other reason for that? Historically, injuries, otherwise it could have accounted for that.
Like I said in the beginning, he said there were no history of accidents or anything like that. And that's a very good question. That, you know, is it just his body type, the being or having a flat low back? I don't know. It could be something that developed from childhood. You know, it could be postural from childhood onwards. It could be genetic. It could be both.
Okay.
But difficult to say.
Okay. So you've done the examination. You've sent him for X-ray before doing any next steps, or have you given him a few things to do on the back of that first session to see if that influences pain? What's kind of been the process at that point where you're thinking this seems to be the area of concern? There's this lower crossed posture, this kind of classic muscular imbalance, for want of a better description. Gone to X-ray. X-ray's clear. Have you done anything in the interim, or have you just waited for that clarity in the X-ray first?
Straight away, before the X-ray, we started with posture. So we made sure that he understood he's got to stay in neutral. So if he's going to bend forward, there's going to be more bending forces through his TL area, so top of his low back. And that's what we don't want. We want to leave that area with rest. So we went through squat technique, bending through his hips, made sure he understands that. He's a good mover, so he picked it up very quickly. Then we looked at the best way he can sit. So I helped him to understand, look, if you're going to slouch on the couch, you're basically rounding your mid-back. That's going to come through that area. You're going to put pressure on that disc. We want to try and avoid the couch. And if you sit at a chair, you got to have low back support. We've got to have something, because it's quite flat. We don't want to have too much of a support, but we need some support to take the back a little bit into a resting, slightly hollow position. And we tried that in my practice, and it felt very good straight away. So a little lumbar cushion that's supporting his low back, and some chairs, otherwise some chairs already offer him that little bit of low back support. That's key. That was key. So he's doing that all the time now, and he's noticing that that's really making a big difference to allow for the recovery.
Okay. So the immediate first thing was, let's manage these aggravating factors and teach, train, educate or the neutral spine, the importance of bending through the hips, so that actually we minimize that bend through the lower back. And what we're not saying is you cannot bend through your low back forevermore, that, you know, we're designed to move, but when there's something that's sensitized and irritated, we've got to limit the movement through that area to allow it to settle.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's been all the movement before that's kept it irritated, and it's never really allowed it to heal and to recover and to build tolerance in order to stress the area without getting a reaction. But I also explained to him that he is more vulnerable to getting a reaction at the area. So things like squatting or deadlifting, you know, he doesn't have the typical squatter's low back advantage, or the typical deadlifter's low back advantage. Because his back is so flat, the muscles that actually come into the low back vertebrae, they're supposed to stop the vertebrae from sliding on top of each other. And because of the flatness of his low back, he doesn't have that support as well as somebody else. And so he's much more likely to fail earlier with not such a heavy weight if he's going to lift something off the ground like a deadlift.
Okay. And what we're saying in that situation is, with that classic curvature going kind of back the way in a lower back, the lower back muscles generally with a neutral spine act at around a 45 degree angle and therefore limit the slide, the anterior translation, anterior slide of vertebra one over the other. But what we're saying here is structurally with a flattened back, those muscles are arguably potentially acting more in line with the spine and therefore potentially loading the spine more. And so that's making him more vulnerable because of those potential structural differences.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that he did not know before, you know, and that's something that I think a lot of people don't know if they have that type of back, because, you know, in your practice, you see it as well. You see the typical quite hollow low back, sometimes way too hollow. And you see the other end of the spectrum, the quite flattened back. And if people know what their back has an advantage for or not, you got to be careful in what you're going to do with it. So I just educated them on the fact that, look, we can deadlift, but we're going to have to do it in a way where you lift between your legs a heavy kettlebell. So you're more upright than forward. And it's a matter of building it up, you know, knowing where you, how you position your low back, your upper back. And from there, if you drive and you teach yourself and you get strong in that position, you could definitely deadlift, but it's got to be adapted. You've got to be a little bit more careful than somebody else.
Okay. That was going to be my next question. Was the advice, don't do these exercises, we'll choose you and educate you on some better ones, or just actually we've got to adapt the way that you do these exercises, but absolutely, you know, you can keep doing them.
Adapt them, but let's recover first. And so it's going to take some time. It's going to take a few months to recover fully because there's a chronic situation. Maybe some central sensitization. I don't know. It didn't look like it was anything in that direction. But the point is that, you know, he has time. He wants to get better. That's his main priority. So let's give it time. Build some strength with other exercises. You know, there's loads of anti-flexion, anti-extension, anti-lateral flexion, anti-rotation exercises. You know, let it heal properly. And then if he has the drive or the motivation to go and do deadlifting or squatting or anything like that with a bar, then we make sure that he does it in the right way.
Okay. So it was a case of removing the exercises in the short term, let the back recover, and then when we go back to these exercises, we re-educate on how you adapt them to do them better based on your spine and your individual structural scenario, situation, whatever you want to call it. Okay. All right. So what were the first things that you gave him to do at this point then, to as the kind of initial treatment plan, if you like? And did you do any kind of passive hands-on treatment, or was it very much active exercise movement-based advice initially?
Yeah, so initially movement, posture, exercise-based. And what I started with was, like I mentioned, posture. And then after that, we went on to very simple core exercises, the bird dog, side planks. We stuck to those to start with. Oh yeah, and then we also addressed the lower cross syndrome. So I use a half kneeling hip opener, you know, where you really engage the glutes to open up the front of the hip with a little bit of a balancing aspect to it. So we, you know, just to get you to work harder with the coordination of staying upright while you're squeezing the glute and opening up the hip. And then we started with planking on the knees because it was very tolerable, felt good. And we made sure that by planking on the knees, we have a short lever on the knees and we don't hang in the low back. And by, I think, the fourth or fifth treatment, we started loosening the low back. So we started loosening, especially the TL area, because I mentioned it was very stiff in the beginning when I felt his low back spine. And so we, I started loosening specifically the upper low back transitioning point of the beginning of the rib cage. That area I loosened.
All right. Okay.
And it seemed to work very well.
And what was? Okay, great, great. And the response. So we, you know, after a few sessions, how was he feeling, and where did you go from there?
He did very well from the get-go. It obviously took a few days, but when I saw him, he said, "Yeah, you could really with the exercises, especially the posture and the advice in the chair and filling up his low back." And we looked at a few more postural aspects, but he said that it felt good to from the start. But after, I think, 3-4 weeks, he had no more pain. He was really good. And then not so long ago, before the last time I saw him, he did something at home, because they're still building, they're extending their house, and he lifted something heavy, and that was not a good idea, and he had a little fallback, and now he's already good again. But he knew after that it wasn't a good idea to do that.
Okay, so here's a guy with 10 plus years of chronic episodic low back pain. He's tried to work through it a bit with exercise. He's seen physios, osteopaths, otherwise. And within a couple of weeks, few sessions, just by identifying that specific point and that movement irregularity, if you like, or area where there's that overuse, shall we say, and then limiting that and just removing the aggravating factors that are irritating, constantly sensitizing that area, alongside some good core exercises, safe core exercises, he was pretty quickly pain-free.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And I think okay. Pain-free, maybe still a little bit vulnerable, but for a big part, he was functioning without pain. Yeah.
Amazing. And is he now back doing squats, deadlifts? Is it kind of... has he progressed to doing some of those movements again yet, or are we still at the stage where he's just in that kind of recovery phase of building that core strength, building those healthier movement habits, and kind of rectifying this lower cross posture before then kind of going to the next level, if you like?
Exactly the last one, Ben. He's not deadlifting or squatting. It's never been really a goal of his. It was more the idea of, I need to strengthen my back. It was also told to him, you need to strengthen your back. But, you know, that's generally advice. We get told to do something, but we don't get told how to do it. And so he's just mainly staying in the working with his core, building strength with a neutral spine, making sure he's giving his back a rest. When he sits down in the correct way, or when he stands in the correct way. So we've agreed that he's not going to do anything like that very soon. He's just going to, his real goal is to get back on the bike in the summer next year. So he's staying off the bike for now, building up some more tolerance, and then later he will get back on the bike.
And just on that note, because I think this is an interesting point, when a lot of cyclists are adopting that kind of racing posture, you see a lot of flexion through the back, which is a kind of a posture that we often advise to avoid consistently when it comes to disc health and otherwise, particularly through the lower back. Is the advice for him going to be to try and better hinge through the hips and keep a straighter back on the bike, or is it allowing that tissue to resolve enough and rehab enough and desensitize that then we can reintroduce training that allows him to be in that more kind of rounded cycle, classic cycling posture? Or is he going to have to adapt that as well? What's the thought process there? Because there is an element of certain sports, certain risk in terms of back health, musculoskeletal health and otherwise. Whereas for many patients, they're going to be really happy and they're going to say, I'm not going to do cycling.
Yeah, so he likes cycling too much to stop, and he's not a professional cyclist, but he cycles a lot. So he would like to cycle a lot or regularly. And we agreed that he'd sit less bent forward and raise or change his bike's position so he's actually more upright to a degree, which is still quite forward. But so that's going to take off pressure from his low back. And otherwise, we just agreed that he's going to keep working with building strength around his core, you know, with specifically side planking, planking, bird dog, your typical approach that we use, for example. But also, you know, I said to him, you've got to be mindful if you have lower tolerance when you've been bending for a long time, because that's that long sustained period of forward bending that's really causing the trigger, that after cycling, you know, you should relax. And that relax is not hanging in the couch, because that's going to put even more pressure on that area. It's actually do tummy lying, take the pressure off your back, or, you know, sit in a proper chair, make sure your upper back makes contact so your low back is in a neutral, you know, make sure you're filling up your low back with a bit of support. You've got to be mindful if you're going to challenge that vulnerable part of your spine. And he's fully on board with that.
Yeah, and I think that kind of is a great stage to kind of conclude, because I think that there's an element there of management of a back versus this kind of thought process sometimes of do this, do that, do the other, and now you're cured for life. There's that element of let's manage the back health, and that's some active work, but also maybe some passive work that is every now and again a check-in, a challenge, a review of exercises and things that just ultimately helps to manage that individual's back versus this thought process of cure it forever.
Yeah.
But being mindful of those individuals having the tools that they can look after their own back health.
Yeah.
And I think that's key. It's the ultimately the empowering those individuals to understand and better educate them that on the things that could be aggravating, could be problematic for them, such as cycling in this case, and then building a plan that helps that individual to manage their back health. And I think this is a great example of how just passive treatment alone would not have been beneficial for this individual, because outside of the clinical setting, they're continually doing things that are aggravating the problem. And unless we can remove those things and identify those things, then you're not really setting a platform for effective rehabilitation. Ultimately, that individual's just having a bit of pain management by having treatment, but we're not helping to resolve, manage the long-term issue. So I think that's a great example of identifying those problematic irritants, removing them, and then building a rehabilitation program to manage that back in the long term, which is a collaborative process, which is a great example of a successful outcome.
So yeah.
Fantastic. Anything else to add, Jacob, before we wrap up?
Just want to say that part of what you, just to add on to what you've just said, it's helping him to understand his back. That was key for him, because he was searching for a long time for a solution, but he didn't understand his back. And then by helping him to understand what was going on with his back, I saw it also in his face. He understood it, and that meant he could do something with it.
Nice. Yeah, and that is ultimately the aim, isn't it? Certainly from the work that we do, is to empower the individual to better understand and manage their own back health. And in so many cases, that is achievable. But unfortunately, the advice and the approach that people are getting is just not conducive to those favorable outcomes. So awesome result. It's great to share that case. It's certainly something we'll be doing more of. I think it's really helpful. It's helpful for people to listen in. It's helpful to educate and inform on the individual differences that people can experience and can expect to experience, but also demonstrate just how effective a good rehabilitation program can be. So appreciate you sharing, Jacob. Great to jump on again, and we'll wrap up there, and we'll be on again soon with another episode. I'll speak to you again soon.